Well, brethren, we're here to celebrate the restitution of all things, because everything in this earth needs to be restitutioned, if that's a word. This is the third day of the feast, and we're looking at probably in somewhere 425 years into the millennium. All things have been renewed, far better than even the Garden of Eden, because Christ himself will be ruling the earth with 10,000s of his saints. That's everyone within the hearing of my voice. The purpose that God originally planned for man, since he formed him out of the earth, will have become a reality. But through much effort on God's part and the sacrifice of Christ for all humanity, that incredible human potential will be fulfilled. Let's take a little closer look at the renewing. Brethren, there's all kinds of renewing that need to be done on this earth right now. The renewing of business and industry, some of the big ones. The renewing of the technology of science and technology. The renewing of music, of the arts and entertainment, and on we could go, that need to be renewed, and we all but have to look in our lives around us to see the things that need to be renewed in a godly manner. The three points I'd like to make in renewing, and I think they're critical points. Number one is government. Number two is education. And number three is agriculture. Mr. Armstrong once said that government was everything. And education, he said, was one of the problems in this world. And agriculture is another one, I think, that is critical. You see, it's what we put in our minds and what we put in our bodies that makes us who we are. Let's take government for a moment. In today's society, if you are from the government and you come up to someone and you say, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help," Ronald Reagan said those were frightening words for most humans. And they are, because it's man's government. And most men, I think, and family people would immediately grab hold of their wallet and put their kids under the bed to hide them from them. There has to be a government structure. In John chapter 14, and in John chapter 14, beginning in verse 2, we read, "In my Father's house are many mansions," that's offices, positions. "Were it not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you." And that's what Christ and God the Father are doing now. They're preparing positions for you and I in this restitution of all things. The higher offices, I believe, have already been filled several thousand years ago by the patriarchs and the prophets, such as Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Elijah, Daniel, David, and the apostles. Take David. David will be ruling over all of Israel. How do we know this? In Hosea chapter 3. And in Hosea chapter 3, and beginning in verse 5, we read, "Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek the Eternal their God, and David their king, and shall fear the Eternal and his goodness in the latter days." In Ezekiel chapter 34. In Ezekiel chapter 34, beginning in verse 23, We read, "And I will set up one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them, even my servant David. He shall feed them, and he shall be their shepherd." I think it's kind of interesting that whenever God told Samuel to go to Jesse's house and to anoint the future king of Israel, that as Samuel arrived at Jesse's house, he saw these strapping young men, tall, good-looking, intelligent. And each one that Samuel looked at, God said, "Nope, that's not the one I want." Because he could have said to Samuel, "Go and anoint David as my king." But where was David? He's what I refer to as CB, TCB, taking care of business. He was in the field tending the sheep like he should have been and like he was. So when he arrived at the home, God told Samuel, "That's the one I want. That's the shepherd." And about the apostles, God says the apostles will be ruling over the 12 tribes of Israel under David. In Matthew 19, and in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 28, we read, "And Jesus said to them, Truly I say to you, that you who have followed me in the regeneration when the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, you also shall sit on the 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel." God does not go into specifics about which tribe for which apostle, but it will be tailor-made for each of them. And for example, each tribe has a certain personality, some good, some bad. And I think about Reuben sometimes, because God said of Reuben, "You're as unstable as water." I have an idea that God's going to appoint an apostle that's very stable. God has been specific in some areas and left other areas for our speculation. And it's okay to speculate here at the feast about some things, as long as we don't get too far out. Perhaps Noah will likely have a hand in relocating all the people into their proper countries. God's government is completely foreign to this world. The governments of this world are actually Satan's governments. Just look at some of them. Anyone like to go to North Korea and live? How about Venezuela? How about China? And look at the situation with Hong Kong now, since Ephraim has left it to the Chinese. And how about South Africa? Would you like to be a farmer in South Africa today? I don't think so. Here's what Mr. Armstrong had to say about the new world government that's coming. And this is from Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, on page 40. Mr. Armstrong wrote, "Now notice just how the new world government will function. It will not be so-called democracy." And I'd like to interject here what Churchill once said about democracy. He said it's the worst form of government, but it's the only one that we can live under. My definition of democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's going to be for lunch. Lamb chops, I can tell you that. I continue. "It will not be socialism. It will not be communism or fascism. It will not be human monarchy, oligarchy, or plutocracy. It will not be man's government over man. Man has proven his utter incapability of ruling himself. It will be divine government, the government of God. It will not be government from the bottom up. The people will have no votes. It will not be government of or by the people, but it will be government for the people. It will be government from the top, God Almighty, down. There will be no election campaigns, no campaign fundraising dinners, no dirty political campaigns, where each candidate attempts to put himself forward in the most favorable light, defaming, denouncing, discrediting his opponents. No time will be wasted in mudslinging campaigns in the lust for power. And I think how interesting that is at this time, especially in America, with the elections that are going on. You talk about mudslinging and accusations, and it's and even in I've been watching the English Parliament here of late. My, we're an embarrassment to the world, and we're supposed to be leaders, Ephraim and Manasseh, and we're just an embarrassment to the world. What must they think of us? And I continue with the quote of Mr. Armstrong. No human will be given any government office. All in government service will then be divine spirit beings. That's you and I, brethren. In the kingdom of God, the God family. God's purpose is to restore the government of God with his laws, statutes, commandments, and judgments. In Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6, a scripture that is quoted during this time of the year for us many, many times, but it needs to be repeated and repeated and again and again and again. In Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be on his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." Over down in verse 7, "There is no end of the increase of his government and peace on the throne of David and on his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from now on, even forever. The zeal of the Eternal of Hosts will do this." The millennium is a time when we will be living what? That government. We will be governing according to God's law, something this world has never had before. The law of God will be restored to this earth. There will be only one law, and that's the law of God. Will it be similar, do you think, to the time when ancient Israel was brought into the promised land under Joshua? What happened right before entering? In Deuteronomy 31, and in Deuteronomy 31, beginning in verse 10, "And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of 7 years, at the set time of the year of release, in the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel has come to appear before the Eternal your God in the place which he shall choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Gather the people, men and women, and the little ones, and your stranger who is within your gates, so that they may hear, and that they may learn, and fear the Eternal your God, and be careful to do all the words of this law." We heard something on the proper fear of God from Mr. Gardner in his sermonette. Continuing on in verse 13, "And that their sons who have not known may hear and learn to fear the Eternal, your God, as long as you live in the land where you go over Jordan to possess it. And I might add, when we go over to Jerusalem to possess it. Moses told ancient Israel what would happen to them in the future, specifically at the end time. Skip on down to verse 26. Take this book of the law and put it in the sight of the ark of the covenant of the Eternal your God, so that there may be therefore a witness against you. For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. Behold, while I am still alive with you today, you have been rebellious against the Eternal. And how much more after my death? Does that ring a bell? At the death of Mr. Armstrong, what happened to the church? Sounds a little duality to me. Continuing in verse 28. Gather me all the elders of your tribes and your officers so that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. No excuses. For I know that after my death, you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you. And evil will happen to you in the latter end of the days, because you will do evil in the sight of the Eternal to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. It's called the tribulation. In Deuteronomy 32, if we would turn there, is referred to as the Song of Moses. Ancient Israel was to be taught this Song of Moses. Will the people learn it in the millennium? In Deuteronomy 32, beginning in verse 1. Give ear, O you heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. My doctrine shall drop as the rain. My speech shall drop down as the dew, as the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass, because I will publish the name of the Eternal. Ascribe your greatness unto our God. He is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment, a God of truth, and without iniquity, just and right is he. Moses then proceeded to tell Israel all the calamities that would befall them if they forgot his laws, which is exactly what happened. The tribulation is a direct result of not obeying God, not living by his laws. Israel will come out of the tribulation, a remnant, and they will come out a different, they won't be stiff-necked. They won't be hard of heart. They will have gone through the most terrible time that's ever been upon the earth. And I have an idea they will be easily worked with, because they will have finally learned their lesson. They will be taught the laws of God. It is my speculation, and this is, quote, Stephen Brough's speculation, that as we go to the place of safety, God willing, and if it is Petra, which I believe it is, I've been there three times now, and I've seen where Mr. Armstrong said, we fled Petra. Yes, you would, the first time I went there, you would have fled Petra. It was a terrible place. But since UNESCO has gone in, and I was there in 2000, they have renewed Petra. There are 4-star hotels all over the place, and when I left, they were still building more. If it is the place of protection for God's people, we'll be there for some time. And I think, as it was for ancient Israel, will it be for the remnant? And as the remnant comes back to the promised land, will they be put in Petra, taught the new language, given a new Bible with the proper language and in order that it's supposed to be, and there be no errors in it whatsoever, and be taught God's laws, His Sabbath, His holy days, His statutes and judgments, and then brought into Jerusalem? Because God is not the author of confusion. That's just my speculation. But man's laws that we go through today, and we can all see those today, that how it's working out for humanity. Every country on earth has invented for itself numerous laws. Whether they realize it or not, they are based on God's law. But man, without God's Spirit, ends up adding to basic laws until we have hundreds of laws regarding, take murder. You got first degree, second degree, you got manslaughter, you got criminal intent, you've got all kinds. But what's funny to me is you still have some very ridiculous laws that have been made over the years in both the United States and the UK. There are laws that no one has bothered to repeal, and they're still in effect. They're ridiculous laws. And yesterday we had a couple that took us on a tour along the channel, and I just kept hoping that we would not see a beach twill or a sturgeon, because you have a law on the books here in the UK that all beach twills and sturgeons must be offered to the reigning monarch. So if we'd have found a whale or a sturgeon along the channel, we'd had to put it in a car and drove directly to London, I guess, and present it to the monarchy. Another law that you have is no person shall, in the course of a business, import unto England potatoes which he knows or has reasonable cause to suspect are from Poland. Another one is, members of Parliament are not allowed to wear armor in Parliament. And I've been watching the Brexit in the Parliament. I think maybe that one needs to stay on the books. It is an offense to be drunk and in charge of cattle in England and Wales. It is illegal to handle a salmon in suspicious circumstances. And here's one that you have all of that I've ridden with thus far that have violated the law that I can testify to, as the feast coordinator, I won't mention any names, picked me up, my wife and I, at the airport, and then we made the little tour yesterday with a couple that took us a little tour of Lou, and then last night, we had a couple and a family take us out to dinner who gave the sermonette, who will be unnamed, violated the law because I noticed that you must carry a bale of hay in your vehicle at all times. And I did not see a bale of hay in any of these vehicles. Here's one that just absolutely just flabbergasted me. In York, it is perfectly legal to shoot a Scotsman with a crossbow upon seeing one, except on Sundays. Now, I'm not going to leave the U.S. out either. We've got some laws on our books. In Quitman, Georgia, chickens are not allowed to cross the road. And here's one in North Carolina that affects me. It's against the law to sing off key. So I couldn't sing hymns in North Carolina. You may not sell toothpaste and a toothbrush to the same customer on Sunday. That's in Rhode Island. You may not take a picture of a rabbit from January to April without an official permit. That's in Wyoming. Bears, moose, elk, deer are okay, but no rabbits. In San Antonio, Texas, it's against the law to flirt. And in Idaho, it's illegal for a man to give his fiancée a box of candy that weighs more than 50 pounds. I wonder what that is inferring. Maybe he just doesn't need, she doesn't need to add another 50 pounds. Here's another one in Washington State. A motorist with criminal intentions must stop at the city limits and telephone the chief of police that he is entering the town. And in Arizona, if you are found stealing soap, you must wash yourself until the bar of soap has been completely used up. And this is my favorite. And this is in Waynesboro, Virginia. It is against the law for a woman to drive a car on Main Street unless her husband is walking in front of the car waving a red flag. These are laws that man made, and they're still there. These are the kind of laws that you get when men cannot judge wisely. We're seeing that today more and more. Every year we have more and more new laws and regulations in which there's no wisdom in them, no common sense. There's just corruption and hypocrisy. The lawmakers make laws for the public, then exempt themselves. One example is the FBI, which is one of the chief law enforcement agencies in the U.S., it's okay for them to lie to you, but you can't lie to them. When I was a Texas state trooper, we were not allowed by law to go near the legislature when they were in session. It was actually a law. The reason being, they were so lawless, they were drunk, they were immoral, and doing things illegal. And they didn't want us around because we'd have put them in jail. Man has thousands and thousands of laws in various countries. God has basic 10. The entirety of Psalm 119 is about God's law. In Psalms chapter 119, beginning in verse 1, blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of the eternal. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies and that seek him with their whole heart. They also do no iniquity. They walk in his ways. Thou hast commanded us to keep your precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep your statutes. Then I shall not be ashamed when I have respect to all your commandments. I will praise you with uprightness of heart when I shall have learned your righteous judgments. I will keep your statutes. Mr. Armstrong once said that government was everything. It is. It's the basic. And that's one thing that we're going to have to get done in the millennium at the very beginning, is who's in charge. In charge is the government of God. And after that, Mr. Armstrong put a great deal of emphasis on education. So let's take a look at education. We could talk probably all day about the world system of education. I told someone last night, I think, the only reason I went to school was to learn how to read and write, because I thought I knew everything else. On the one hand, mankind has discovered and compiled an incredible amount of knowledge. But how is all this knowledge and information being conveyed? Mainly through a public school system. I went to school in the 1950s. It was totally different then. Being from Texas, yes, I have ridden my horse to school. And we would, during hunting season, we would take our Winchesters or whatever and bring them into the school room and put them in the back of the room, and no one ever thought anything about it. And there was never any intention in our mind to ever take a human life. A lot of us didn't get to school till later because we had to be on the harvest. We had to see that the crops were gathered or the cattle were rounded up. There was no problem. The school didn't demote you because you had missed a few days or a week of school. My wife went to school some 20 years later. And it was changed a little bit. They would frown at you if you carried a Winchester into the school, and they had strict attendance because they were being paid by the number of days that you attended. School is quite a bit different now in the U.S. You have policemen on duty. You have metal detectors. You have shootings in schools. You have stabbings in schools. And I don't think you get a very good education in today's public schools in the U.S. School today is basically nothing more than a memorization of facts, man-made facts. I remember Mr. Armstrong talking about his grandson that took a test about who discovered America. If you remember, his grandson said, well, the Indians did. They were here. Oh, no. No, no. It was not that. No, you couldn't give. No, that was the wrong answer. He failed. Columbus discovered America. Even if the Indians were there to meet the boat. From kindergarten to university, the kind of teaching can only be successful to a degree. Without God in the picture, the entire system eventually goes astray. Now the school system is mainly propaganda indoctrination. Mr. Armstrong stated that in Mystery of the Ages, page 346, I quote, God's inspired word, the Holy Bible, is the foundation of knowledge. The educating and re-educating of the world will be one of the most important tasks the kingdom of God will face after Christ returns to rule. Mr. Armstrong also pointed out in Mystery of the Ages that it was very likely that the prophet Elijah would be in charge of re-educating the world in regards to spiritual knowledge, because he had also established three colleges. So I suspect that Mr. Armstrong may also be involved in that. He also built three colleges and was commissioned by God to restore the truth at this end time, which he did. Part of Mr. Armstrong's job was to educate the church. He spent most of his life doing just that, educating us in the way of God, so that we might do the same one day in the millennium of which we are here to celebrate. The Gentile nations will eventually want what Israel has. They will want to be taught God's way of life. In Micah 4, beginning in verse 1, but in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Eternal shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and the people shall flow unto it. And many nations, and many nations shall come and say, come, and let us go up to the mountain of the Eternal, and to the house of God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth from Zion, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. The time of Solomon is kind of a type of the millennium. It was a time when Israel was at its zenith of power and wealth. In 1 Kings chapter 10, and in verse 1, in 1 Kings chapter 10, beginning in verse 1, "And when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Eternal, she came to prove him with hard questions. And she came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels, and bare spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when she was come to Solomon, she commanded him with all that was in her heart. And Solomon told her all her questions. There was not anything hid from the king, which he told her not. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he had built and the meat of his table and the sitting of his servants and the attendance of his ministers and their apparel and his cupbearers and his ascent by which he went up into the house of the Eternal, there was no more spirit in her." Wow. But there's one greater in Jerusalem now, and that's Jesus Christ with 10,000s of his saints. What do you think that's going to impress these people and leaders that come up to question Christ? You think they'll be impressed? One greater than Solomon will be reigning. And he said, and she said to the king, "It was a true report that I heard in mine own land of your acts and of your wisdom. However, I believed not the words until I came, and my eyes had seen it. And behold, the half was not told me of your wisdom and prosperity exceeds the fame which I heard. Happy are your men, happy are these your servants, which stand continually before you, and that hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, which delights in you to set you on the throne of Israel, because the Eternal loved Israel forever. Therefore made he thee king to do judgment and justice." What's it going to be like when Jesus Christ is in Jerusalem and 10,000s of his saints? I think it will be a time when those people there would be very, very happy. How many people living today and over the past nearly 6,000 years have lived and died with no real chance in life? The so-called third world countries. I think sometimes when I see pictures of Africa or Asia, the little children with their bellies expanded because of hunger. What a waste. There used to be an advertisement for a colored college. It says a mind is a terrible thing to waste, and it is. How many minds are being wasted now all over the world in third world countries? How many Einsteins or Mozarts might there have been who had never had the chance? The waste. Another subject I'd like to cover is that of agriculture. My brother, my little brother, I should say, who is also a minister in another group, graduated A&M University, a very prestigious university in Texas, Agriculture Mechanical College, magna cum laude, and he's in the who's who of college graduates of the United States. And upon his graduation with his bachelor's degree, they said, we'd like you to stay here and teach and get your master's degree and your doctor's if that's what you want. But my brother, if you met him, you'd just think you met an old country boy, that just an old farm boy. And he drove an old pickup truck. But he had a bumper sticker on that pickup truck that I'll never forget. And that bumper sticker said, if you eat, you're involved in agriculture. And I can say one thing, brethren. We here at the feast, we're involved in a lot of agriculture. We do a lot of plowing. I did some last night. In Amos chapter 3, Amos chapter 9. And in Amos chapter 9, beginning in verse 13, we read, behold, the days come, said the Eternal, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes, him that sows seed, and the mountain shall drop sweet wine, and all the hills shall melt. Remember in the booklet, or the book, United States and Britain in Prophecy, where they had pictures of grain being stored in the streets of America? That's my hometown. We had so much produce coming in that we'd have to dump it in the middle of the streets and block the streets, because the trains that came in with these huge cars couldn't haul it off fast enough. And these farmers were doing quite well. I remember this as a young child. And in the past, the U.S. nation, the United States, has saved many other nations from starvation, especially Gentile nations. But the Gentile nations seem to have short memories. I remember we had so much produce, and the government was having to build these huge granaries to store it. And they just were being charged by the bushel, and it was just, the government was paying out millions and millions of dollars for millions and millions of tons of grain that had to be stored. So the government got the idea, that told the farmers, now look, if you'll just plant half your crop this year, whatever you produce, we will pay you like you had it all in cultivation. And they thought they would just get half the return. Well, those old West Texas farmers are not dumb. We had irrigation there, and we had soil as rich as along the Nile River. So those old farmers, they double rode everything, and they shot the fertilizer to it, and they shot the water to it, and they raised just as much on half of it as they did the entire thing. And the government's scratching their head saying, how do they do this? And what, you know, we're... But what happened? And now the farmers are going broke. There was a sign on the Kroger store that said, due to the inability for farmers to get to their crops because of flooding, there will be a shortage of corn and other vegetables. Right now, they should be planting, but they can't even get back into the fields to harvest the crop that they had already raised. So there's a shortage of things like corn and vegetables. And that was a sign on the Kroger, which is a large chain. It's the largest chain probably in the United States, apologizing because they couldn't get the product. I remember my grandfather telling me the story on the ranch there, that during the Depression, man's uh, way of dealing with the depression was to dump the milk, and then I remember my grandfather saying that they had this huge bulldozer that dug this deep pit and ran hundreds and hundreds of cattle in this deep pit. And then there were men from the government with Winchesters, the most beautiful cattle that you could see, and shot them, killed them, and then took the bulldozer and covered them over. And yet people were starving in the United States. But that's man's way of dealing with agriculture, with a... Today, the country of the United States, you might say, is kind of the breadbasket of the world, has only 3 days' worth of wheat in reserve now. The biggest grain elevators probably in the United States are just a few miles from where my wife and I live, in Saginaw, Texas. They are now empty and in bankruptcy. In the world tomorrow, on a little brighter note, there will be no need for pesticides or herbicides. There will be no genetically modified or hybrid seeds. Probably no weeds or thistles, at least not like we're used to now. If you've ever got binderweed in your garden, you know what I'm talking about, how frustrating that can be. In Joel 2, beginning in verse 19, we read, "Yes, the Eternal will answer and say unto his people, Behold, I will send you grain and wine and oil, and you shall be satisfied with it, and I will no more make you a curse among the nations." Skipping on down to verse 22. "Do not be afraid, beasts of the field, for the pastures of the wilderness grow green, for the tree bears its fruit, and the fig tree and the vine yield their strength. Be glad then, sons of Zion, and rejoice in the Eternal your God, for he has given you the former rain according to righteousness, and he will cause the rain to come down for you, the former rain and the latter rain in the first month. And the floors shall be full of wheat, and the vats shall overflow with wine and oil." On down to verse 26, "And you shall eat in plenty and be satisfied, and praise the name of the Eternal your God, who has dealt with you wonderfully. And my people shall never be ashamed." In the world tomorrow, there will be one religion, and that's God's true religion. The world will be required to learn a new religion, the truth. People will have to unlearn error. We've all been taught error, both in school and in churches and in society. There is mass confusion in the area of religion today. Probably more than anything else in the world, it's only getting worse as society moves further away from God. In America, Satanism is more prominent now as being a Wiccan, that's a type of witch, I guess. A lot of people want to worship Mother Earth. And so call themselves pagans. The politicians and other elites in the world know that religion is a powerful tool for controlling the populace. So they've involved global warming. It's a method of worshiping Mother Earth. And traditional Christianity is divided and confusing, accepting more and more liberalism. A recent talk show host, who is an atheist, had to defend Christianity. One of his callers was trying to make the case that Christians ought to apologize for Moses, who he claimed was a mass murderer. And the confusing part of it is, I remember I was fired once because of keeping the Sabbath. And they called me in the office and said, "We're having a sales meeting and you need to be there." And I said, "Well, you know, I went to work here." I said, "I wouldn't work on the Sabbath, you know, or Saturday." And they said, "Well, you don't understand. This is the owners of the company are coming in and they want everybody to be there." Well, it happened to be that the owners were Ben and Barry Siegel from New Jersey. They were Jews. And they fired me for keeping the Sabbath. I thought, how ironic. Well, what we put into ourselves, we put what's in our minds and we put what's in our stomachs through agriculture is what we become. And it leads both education and putting physical food into our bodies gives us good health or ill health. Probably a lot of anointing for healing in the beginning of the millennium will take place. But what will it be like in the end? There will be less and less accidents and illnesses as a result of obeying God's health laws. People will be eating fresh food. No processed dead foods. People will have good eating habits too. We're lied to so often today, we start questioning everything. Is our food pyramid even correct? They do alter it from time to time. Is breakfast the most important meal of the day? Do we really need 3 meals a day? We are the most overfed and undernourished society that's ever been. Brethren, in summary, in this day we're celebrating today in the Feast of Tabernacles, we are not quite halfway through the millennium. At this point, but when there has been a spiritual renewing, a restitution of God's government has happened. A restitution of his educational system will have taken place. A restitution of agriculture will have taken place. Through proper education and true religion, all this will result in the fulfillment of God's purpose for man up to this point. The result of the millennium will be literally millions upon millions of new spirit-born children of God, ready and able to assume the task ahead. Mr. Henderson was talking about doubling and doubling in his sermon, and I worked out a mathematical here, really technical for me, taking a penny since we have 31 days in October and doubling it. And if you work one day, you got one penny. You work a whole week, you got 64 cents. You work 2 weeks, you got $51.92. Not very much for 2 weeks' work. And if you work 3 weeks, you finally got $13,291.52. But if you kept on, at the end, in 31 days, I was a little bit off, you got $12,834,526.12. That sounds like a lot, doesn't it, in 31 days? Brethren, we're talking about 425 years. do the multiplication on that. Put that in your calculator and figure it. But put this in your calculator and figure it. God's kingdom is forever. Put that in your calculator and figure it.